So, hi everybody, welcome to those in the class on Karma, and those of you who are online, good to know you're here. So before we begin the actual teaching proper, we'll set the motivation, we'll do a little visualization, and then we'll say a few prayers together, then the actual class will begin. So during the class, there are spaces for questioning and also for meditation. Let's begin. So you need to get comfortable in your seat. So wriggle about, adjust yourself until you do feel easy in your seat. You'd like to have your back straight and shoulders relaxed. Your feet and hands should be placed in a comfortable position. Now your eyes can be open or half closed or closed completely, whatever feels more natural and easy for you. Let your body breathe itself. And while the body is breathing itself, just feel the experience. And then relax into awareness. And then imagine that the ground beneath you is made of a starry sapphire light, which is light and soft as a cloud. That the space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings. And in the space in front of you on the throne, there are cushions of lotus, sun, and moon. And sitting upon the moon seat is the Buddha Shakyamuni. Is golden in color, is wearing the three robes of a monk. His left hand is holding a bowl and his right hand is touching the earth. And the Buddha is surrounded by an assembly of other enlightened beings, including bodhisattvas and deities and solitary realizers and protectors. And you are surrounded by all sentient beings. These include your parents, family and friends, strangers and difficult people. So just take a few moments to recollect how fortunate you are to still be alive today. And while alive, you have the leisure and the opportunity to attain your spiritual goals. Now, it's important that you act quickly because things are not quite right. And this world does not exist as it seems to. While this is the case, nevertheless, you have met a spiritual friend who is leading you in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. The Buddha as teacher, the Dharma as teachings, and the Sangha is those who have put into practice these teachings and are willing and able to help you. So the practice is for us to become enlightened and lead all sentient beings out of suffering. So make the practice as purely as possible. I want you to imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity. And as a deity, you're holding a vajra and bell, and you're sitting within a sphere of great bliss. And it's from within this sphere of great enjoyment that you can join me and say along with me. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this aspiration of ours, imagine that from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down and dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. So your negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan, along with your virtues and realizations, are increased. So cleansed by wisdom and fortified with compassionate love, recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. Decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings into those four immeasurable states. To affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this wish of ours, from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down and dissolve into yourself and all the living beings surrounding you. All negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan, along with your virtues and realizations, are all increased. So cleansed with wisdom and fortified with compassionate love, allow yourself to relax. And from a state of relaxed awareness, invite the field for accumulating merit, which appear. And in their presence, we say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering actually imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So as we've purified the body, speech, and mind somewhat and accumulated some merit, to prevent it dissipating under the soft grasping, we imagine that our body, our merits, all enjoyments are utterly transformed, reappearing as a pure land. And we're going to offer this to the Buddha and the spiritual entourage. And so we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, stirred with flowers, the adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. So release the offering, and the Buddha accepts it with delight. He smiles at us, and we look up and meet his gaze. Under the compassionate gaze of the Buddha, we recollect our wish to give up suffering and its causes, our aspiration to become fully enlightened so that it can help others do the same, and the correct view of emptiness and dependent origination. So induced by our wishes and prayers, the Buddha decreases in size, moves across space, comes to abide above the crown of your head. And he begins to descend and down through the crown of your head down to your heart. Light rays go up from your heart, filling the 10 directions of space. All sentient beings are utterly transformed into the fully awakened state. From within the vastness of enlightenment, you hear the sound of the mantra, and you join in saying, Tayata Muni Muni Mahamanaya Soha. Tayata Muni Muni Mahamanaya Soha. Tayata Muni Muni Mahamanaya Soha. Now, I think that the two purposes have been achieved. You've brought about your own enlightenment and the enlightenment of all beings. You think through these virtuous practice, where each of us quickly achieve the state of the Guru Buddha and actually place all sentient beings without exception into that very same state. It is for this purpose that we're engaging in the practices and learnings. And then breathing in through your nostrils. Now exhale and let your eyes flutter open and move your body in the way you'd like to. So again, you feel quite comfortable in your seat. Okay, so let's have a look what we've covered. Last week we looked at throwing and completing karma. So can anybody remember what a throwing karma does? That's right, throws you into your next rebirth. So the throwing karma of our past life threw us into this rebirth as a human being with the leisure and opportunities to engage in a spiritual path. And what does the completing karma do? Oh, that's the throwing. So we're in here. The completing is like something we find ourselves in a pleasant house and the enjoyments of being a human being. It sort of fills in the picture. Before that, we looked at 1 week we spent on mental karma, and before that, we spent it on physical and verbal karma. Remember, karma is an action, and it's primarily intentions behind our actions. We looked at the different sorts of results of these actions. Again, in terms of different types of rebirth, the environment you find yourself in, the behaviors you experience, and the experiences that take place. We know that karmic action has four major parts. Can somebody remember what the major parts of a complete karmic action are? Yes, the motivation is always a thought, the motivating fact, that's the karma. Yep, what else? We've got an action. The basis, that's right, the action's got to be carried out against somebody. So a human being, the basis is the person, then we have the action, and then, yep, the action finishes, doesn't it? The action culminates. That's the simplest way of looking at it. You've got the three things. So I was just explained as four also. The four karmic principles are, what's the first one? The most important one I'm trying to hammer home to you to get your head around. The karma is certain. Thank you, that's right. Karma is certain. So what does that word mean? What is this, what's certain about karma? Thank you, Cheryl, that's it. Good leads to good, bad leads to bad. That's the certainty. It's never the other way around. It's never a good intention creates a bad outcome. They're not linked up like that, or bad intentions create good outcomes. It's always good, good, bad, bad. Excellent, Cheryl. Well, the other one is that, of course, karma increases, doesn't it? It's another principle, or it's called magnifies. Another is that you cannot experience an effect that you have not created the cause for. So I often think of this like the lotto, right? You can't win the lotto if you haven't bought a ticket. And the last one is that karma just doesn't vanish of its own accord. Its potential is always there until you oppose it in some way, until you do something. Yeah, they don't work. It doesn't work like that. No, 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 no. No, no. Yeah, yeah. Thought karma is basically the intention. So every action is created, you have a cause, which is really the karma, and then there's the outcome of the action. Right? Many people in the West talk about karma as being the effect. It's not, they're called the effects of karma. Karma is the action, and the action is really the intention. So today we're going to look at purifying karma, and in particular, four remedies that do that. And then how do we save our virtue, keep it intact? These are the books I've used. So Mickey was talking about this book on the India, Steps on the Path to Enlightenment. It's terrific. Really easy to read, and it's really quite complete. You see, it's quite a thick book. If it's half price out there and you buy it, you've got yourself a really good deal. There's a book right next to it called Vajrasattva Meditation. This is a tantric form of purification, but in this particular book, it has these four opponent powers, and they're highlighted. And I wanted to put that up there because some of us took this initiation recently, and so it's a useful book to have a look at. What's very good about it is all the colour photos in it. The other two books are written by Sonyas, the Dalai Lama, and Venerable Thupten Chodron, and they really flesh out this topic of karma. So the first thing we want to ask is, like, can karma itself be purified? So what do you think? Yes or no? It's a yes. That's right. The answer is yes. Right? So the choices you make in the present have the power to reshape the consequences of past actions. That's the idea behind purification. Right? We look back, we know we've been unskillful in the past. If we don't do something about what we've done in the past, it could produce an effect in our present or the future. And if it's been unskillful, we know what type of consequences will we experience. Will they be positive or negative? Good or bad? Cheryl?
Sorry,
okay. If we have created unskillful, if we have behaved unskillfully in the past, what will be the, and we've done nothing about it, what will be the consequences for us in the present and the future?
Bad results.
Yeah, bad results. So this comes back to what we said before, right? This is what's definite about karma. It doesn't, so I said, and Ruby asked me, she said, oh, so we've done something bad in the past. Does this mean something good's going to happen to us in the present or future? The answer is no. Bad follows bad, good follows good. We want to keep the good and increase its effects. We want to decrease the negative effect of what we've done in the past. That's right. And this is what what we mean by purification. We alter the effect that we might experience in our present and future from both. Yeah, we've acted unskillfully in this life and in past lives too. So we don't want to experience the full effect of those unskillful actions. So this is why we purify. That's right. We decrease the strength and power and the effects of our past unskillful actions. That's right. Yeah, we lessen the effects. That's the major thing to look at. Right? So one of the major effects we don't want to experience is the fully ripened effect, the throwing karma. Right? We do not want, when we behave unskillfully in the past, one of those effects could be a throwing karma, which we want through fruition or result, which could be bad for us. We don't want that. So a simple explanation. So it's what you might find very useful is just to look at this this life in terms of unskillful actions and their outcomes. So if you look at like the court system, right? So somebody's done something unskillful, they've committed a crime, they've hurt somebody. They end up in the court system. The judge has to make some, you know, you have the prosecution present their case and then the judge rules, doesn't he? And the person who's being held to account for their crime, what sort of result do you think they want? A good one, eh? That's right. But in terms of the good, it can only be in terms of the good in terms of a decrease in their sentence, isn't it? Because when they get sentenced, there's often the harshest sentence or there's sentences beneath it. It's often on a sliding scale. So imagine you've done it, imagine you're there, right? You've done the crime. What's the best thing that you could do to get a decrease in the sentence from the judge? And once behave yourself, Susan?
Show your contrite.
Yeah, show your contrite, show you're sorry. If that's what they're all looking for. They're all looking for, you understand you've created a crime, don't you? You've hurt somebody or did something wrong. If you can say, I'm so sorry for doing that, I'll never do it again, and blah, 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 you know, then they're quite likely to look upon you with more mercy, aren't they? And say, oh, this person actually understands they've done something wrong. Right? So it's quite possible that the judge gives you a lesser sentence than what you could have got. Right? Whereas those people have a sort of contempt for the justice system and go, screw you, you know, like, I don't care. Then the judge comes down really heavy on them. This is how karma works too. But you're the judge. Yeah, and it can also happen like, so when you do it in this life, one of the things is you say, okay, so this behavior, I could have done this before in past lives, I'm doing it again. And if I don't do something about it, I'll do it again in the future. So in this life, this is what the justice system is concerned with, isn't it? They think, we can't just let you go, mate, because you might do this again. And then they want you to demonstrate that you won't. So when you go to jail, right, then you have to do something often about it, don't you? If there's processes in there for you to do that. But you try and change your behaviour, and when you go up for them, what do you call it? When you go up for your
parole,
that's right. You try to demonstrate to the judge, I've been a good fellow, and this is what I've done to make sure I don't do that type of crime again. So this is what we do in this life. Karma is very, very similar. Yeah, it begins to straight away remorse. The most important thing, remorse. You understand you've done something wrong. You understand there's terrible consequences for this. And you're trying to go, well, that's terrible. What way can I mitigate that? How can I lessen it? You know, and in karma you go, well, I make a promise, I'm never going to do it again. And then you think, so what else can I do just other than promise? You know, I've got to do some more than just promise. So we have these, what they call antidotes. So you do other stuff. But the most important things are remorse and the decision never to do it again. Now, that's really important in this life and in karma too. So there's lots of sort of parallels between how we live life and the Buddhist teaching. I mean, they're based on this life, right? And other lives too. It's just sort of cause and effect. So we can change our present karma and our future karma by understanding what we've done in the past and trying to do something about it. Is this sort of reasonable to you? Do you understand? Or is it not making any sense? This past, this life and in past lives. Yeah. So one of the things I've done, you know, if you take the big picture, and you look back and you go, actually, I don't even remember what I did 2 years ago, let alone in past lives. So it's quite possible I've done all sorts of things and just forgotten. We do that, don't we? Well, we just forget. So then you go, okay, well, then I'd take the view of the gun, then I could have done the worst things. There's no way I could be sure I have not done the worst things. You know? So you go, okay. Then I'm going to purify because I don't know it. It's quite possible I've murdered many people in the past. It's quite possible I've done the worst things. There's no way I can say with certainty I haven't. I don't know. I really don't know. So I'm going to err on the side of safety and assume that I've done the worst. And I don't want the results of that. I don't want it happening to me in this life. And I don't want it to happen to me in future lives. I do not want the results of my negative karma to come to fruition. So you go, okay, then is there something I can do? They go, yeah. Yeah, there's something you can do. If there weren't anything we could do, there'd be no spiritual path. What's the point of a spiritual path? There's nothing you can do about the terrible things we've done in our past. Just look in this life. You say, yesterday I did this silly thing. This morning I did this really silly thing that could produce a karmic outcome for me. Yeah, that's right. There's so many. That's exactly right, Ruby. There's so many. Completed, partially completed. But they're going to bring about consequences. That's right. So many. We don't even know. Yes, it depends how you purify. So if you purify with the wisdom, realizing emptiness, that's quite correct. The four opponent powers, they decrease, they diminish the power of the future consequences. You know, like a good like example of this life. But suppose I have committed a crime in this life. I find myself up before the judge. I know, you know, that my barrister has told me, this is what you're looking at. That's what they do, don't they? They say, this is the future sentence for you, son. And you go, gosh, what can I do to diminish that? So you find out, and they'll say, well, you need to go to a justice program or something. You might need to go and see a psychiatrist, get a report, do all these things, right? So they go, great, I'll go and do that. And your hope is to decrease your maximum sentence, get a lesser sentence. This is how karma works. When you use these opponent powers, I'll show you that they decrease everything. Right? And that's what you intended, that's what you want to happen. You do not want to get the full consequences of your negative actions. You do want the full consequences of your good actions. You want them to get bigger and greater. Of course you do. Any smart person would. But you don't want the negative, you don't want to get a full consequence of your negative stuff. So what can be done to actually purify our past karmas? Well, yeah. What do you think? What do you think these things here are? They are antidotes. So if you don't take the antidote, you're going to die when you get bitten by a snake. You realize, don't you? I don't want to die. I don't want to die by a snake. But what do you do? Grab the antidote, quick. Use the antidote. Yes, you might get sick for a little while, but you won't die. Purification's like that. And then you come right again, don't you? Yeah, great. I didn't die. I suffered some, it was unfortunate, I got sick and everything, but I didn't die. So you apply the antidotes to weaken the potential of past negative actions from producing their full results. Now, the most complete method for purifying negative karma is the four opponent powers, which is our primary topic today. So, so karma is not permanent. Karma is like it's produced from actions, and these actions have parts. Anything that's produced is subject to change. If we don't do anything about it, then the change gets greater, bigger, magnifies. This karma magnifies. The effects get larger, heavier, stronger. But if you do something about it, they don't. You can make them even weaker because they're produced. But they're subject to change. So we go, I want to change it then. I don't want to die by the snake, but I want to change. I want to change that, that's for sure. So we take an antidote. So here's a quote now from the Buddha himself, from a sutra called Giving the Four Teachings. So I'll give you an opportunity to read it and then I'll say it out loud. So the quote says, Maitreya. So Maitreya is the future Buddha and at this time he's like a bodhisattva. Maitreya. When a bodhisattva, a great being, possesses these four teachings, non-virtuous actions that are performed and accumulated will be overcome. What are these four? They are the power of remorse, the power of the antidote, the power of turning away from faults, and the power of the basis. So again, what I suggest to you is you take something like this and then you go, how would this work like in this life for me at present? What would that mean? So the simple thing is you've got to imagine yourself, you've done something unskillful. Simplest one, I've committed a crime, I've hurt somebody. What do I have to do first? This is the power of remorse. What would you normally do when you feel remorseful about hurting somebody? Yeah, it's the normal thing. Is, I'm sorry. We apologize. It's, if we don't do that, what do you? The other person thinks you don't care. You don't care about me, do you? You're quite willing to hurt me and just leave it like that. But if we apologize immediately, they know, oh, perhaps they didn't mean it. They're sorry about it. So that's the first thing. We're sorry. Then the power of the antidote. The antidote here was the apology. Yeah. The power of turning away from faults. This is when we go, we make a promise to ourselves, I won't do that again tonight to you. We promise for a certain amount of time. And we do the very best to keep the promise. The power of the basis. Here is the power of refuge in the three jewels and the mind of enlightenment. So you were always, that's our reliance, right? So here we can look at your own good nature. So you're relying upon your own intelligence. Buddha means awakened mind. So your mind has been awakened to the consequences of your unskillful behavior. So you rely upon your intelligence, right? So you say, I'm sorry. You've got remorse. What's the antidote? Recompense, remedy, the power of turning away from faults. What's that one, Ruby? The R's. What are the four R's then? We'll say it then again. So if you're going to say the four R's, what are they? Yeah, regret's the first one, regret, remorse.
Reliance.
Reliance is the last one, right? The power of the basis. We rely upon the mind of enlightenment, rely upon the three jewels. Yeah, and we'll come up to them as they're all here. I'll tell you what they are shortly. So it's regret, rely, remedy, and resolve. These are the four R's. So Ruby, if you're going to bring them up, you remember them. You ask me what about the four R's, but you don't know them. So it's nice to know that they've all got R because it's a simple way of doing it. Right? That's right. Yeah, each one begins with an R, so you know. Oh, the first one in normal terms is regret or remorse. So that leads us to this one here, the four remedies. So this is a conscious process of actually reversing the momentum of the harmful act. So in terms of the snake bite one, I'll just go back here, right? So we've been bitten. We regret the fact that we've been bitten. Right? The next thing we look for immediately is the remedy. So here we've got the answer. That's the remedy. Then we resolve not to walk around places where there are snakes, to keep our eyes open. This is the promise, right? We're going to make this. I'm not doing that again. I'm going to be really careful. And then what do we rely upon? Well, in this case, it might be your common sense, right? The fact that you were in this area, you did get bitten by a snake, and you rely upon that information to go, I'm staying away from those areas. Another analogy we can use, and the Buddhists use them often, is the gardening analogy, right? So most times when you have gardens, I'm sure none of us actually plant weeds in our garden, right? But the weeds seem to find a way to get in there anyway, and they start growing, right? So when you see it, you regret the fact that there's weeds in your garden, right? You regret letting it grow, and just so you go, okay. So What are you going to do about it? Well, you rely upon your tools and the methods you have to stop the weeds growing, right? And your remedy, of course, is to pull it out. Do you resolve to not have any more weeds grow in your garden? Do you try and get these four opponents and just apply them? I mean, it's one thing to hear it, but if you don't try to apply it practically to real-world situations, you sort of won't get familiar for it when it actually comes to past actions. You know, when you do this a bit, you can go, well, you know, I have, I mean, I know in my life, I've done a lot of things I regret. You might find the same. Then you can go, well, think about if you've had another life. Won't it be the same? Won't the one before that be the same? There's always stuff we've done and regretted. How many times did you resolve not to do it again? Well, you go, well, sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. You know, some of I thought when I hurt them was good for me. You know, and this is not such a good idea. But that's what we think sometimes. Sometimes we think they deserve it. You know, you hurt me, I hurt you back. You know, we think, well, that's the way. So if you think of just like in this life, and you just go, well, other lives, you'll find quickly it could be a lot of unskillful things you've done, and the consequences could ripen in this life or in the future life. Yes, straight off. That's right. Partial purification is taking place right there. You're regretting. That's right. And then if you decide, oh my gosh, you know, like I don't want to do that again. And that's another one put in place, right? That's great. So straight off, purification is taking place. You know, you ask yourself, so what am I going to rely upon, you know, to not do it again? You know, so you have to think about that. Well, maybe it's like your memory, your intelligence itself, or maybe it's I'm going to rely upon my knowledge that I've committed myself to the Buddhist way of life. That means no harming. So I remember, I'm a Buddhist. I've taken refuge. So I can't harm. I can't do that sort of thing again. Then if you're sensible about it, you think, yeah, but I didn't. I mean, remember, we make promises and we break them. So the first thing is go, so I promise not to do it for the rest of the day. Next day you go, and for today too. Or for an hour. Whatever you're capable of doing, do it for that time. Even if you said 5 minutes, that'll be a complete action. A complete action of the purification. That's great. You get another 5 minutes, another, you know, complete, complete, complete. You want the good actions to be completely complete and the negative ones to be incomplete. But often it's the other way around. So it's, you have to be quite conscious of what you're doing. Yeah, so every one of you have looked back over your lives and found things you've regretted and said to yourself, you know, oh man, I wish I hadn't done that. Good, that's great. There's like, now yeah, make a promise that you won't do it again. Here's the formula. So what we'll do now is we'll go through each of these remedies one by one, talk about them, and then during the, we'll do it sort of groups of two. So I just thought I'd overwhelm you with all of this. So let's just do a little bit at a time, open it up for questions, and then we can have a meditation. So the first R is regret or remorse. Yeah, so I try to exaggerate these things because I want to get through to you. Right? When we regret or have remorse, we're sorry. That's what it basically means. There you go. This word has got different, when you come across it in the text, sometimes they don't use remorse. Sometimes they use the power of, they call it eradication, repudiation, regret, or uprooting and release. Many different terms, but you've got to find one that resonates with you. You don't have to know all the terms. You just have to know, I regret it. Or I have this feeling of remorse about what I did. Now, of all the powers, this is the most important. There's no purification unless this is in there. And especially, it's the strong attitude of aversion towards not the thing itself, but the effects it's going to produce. You know, so like when you get bitten by the snake bite, right? What do you have aversion to? It's the fact that you're going to die if you don't do something about it, right? So you're looking at the effects. Yeah, if you lack this first power, the remaining three powers are weak and ineffective. This is remorse is a sincere, intelligent regret for a harmful action. It is not self-blaming guilt. We are not blaming ourselves. We're looking at the action that produces the effect. So if you feel guilty about this or blame on yourself, you got it wrong. It's the action.
Can you force the action?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's the action that's the thing. The action is going to create more harm for you. That's why you're looking at the action, right? There's action of killing something, and if you've got all the other parts of it, one of the things it can do for you is create a lot of illness for you in a life, or it can shorten your life. But so you're looking at that and going, oh God, I don't want that. We're looking at the action. Yeah, if you look at yourself here and blame yourself, you're on the wrong track. But just be clear about that. It functions by motivating us to change. It stops the negative habit at its source. We generate it by understanding the painful consequences of our actions for ourselves and others. This is why we look at the action. It has consequences. If we look just at ourselves, it sort of stops. Right? We just feel really bad and terrible and sort of incapacitated in a way. Purification starts with a wise wish to heal. It's not the heavy burden of guilt. So if you give the example of the snake bite, right? You get bitten by the snake. It is quite possible that you turn around and go, you idiot, talking to yourself, right? You blah, 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 and do all this. It doesn't help, isn't it? What you should be looking at, oh my God, the consequences of the snake bite are my death. It's the consequences of the bite. Not the fact that you got bitten and then you come around and blame yourself for walking in a place where the snakes, you know, were and so forth. I know for many of us this is quite difficult because we're brought up in a sort of Christian atmosphere. We've got the whole idea of sin, where we are the ones who are wrong. But Buddhism doesn't have anything like that. So regret or remorse is realizing you've taken the poison. It creates an urgent wish to find an antidote, not to blame yourself for having taken it. I mean, we do that, but like I'm just trying to say, if you are, please stop it. Remember in the Buddha, Buddha's teaching is we have this potential, we're much, much greater than what we are. They call that Buddha potential. But we have the potential to be fully awakened. It's just the natural potential of the mind. Why is it natural? Because the mind can change. It's as simple as that. You can change your mind. When we say that we're like sinners or get guilty, it's not we can't change our mind, can it? We are that. We are this person. We're the bad person. So we just dislike ourselves and get stuck there. So if you find yourself still doing that, like trying to stop it immediately, recognize, oh, that's the wrong understanding. That's the wrong view. Actually, I've got this wonderful potential to fully awaken. You know, I mean, that's the marvelous thing of the Buddha's teachings. He's a human being and did this amazing thing. And I go, well, gee, I'm a human being. We're all human beings. You know, if sin was part of our deepest nature, it couldn't happen. So Buddha could not be Buddha if it was actually the way it's presented in some other philosophies and so forth. Right? So it turns out our own application, what we could do, like tonight or this evening, try to recollect a small mistake that you've made, right? Don't go too big here. Just start with something small. Acknowledge its harm without self-blame. That's a nice thing to do, a small one, right? So acknowledge the harm of this small mistake without blaming yourself, and simply feel regret and decide to act differently, or even wish to act differently. Start there, start with a wish to act differently. Now, of course, we've done something like this, and we know the effects are bad. We don't want to have those effects. We don't want to have the effect of dying out in the desert or the bush because we got pushed by snow. We want a remedy. We want to stop that. This is the second power, second antidote, remedy, the antidote. And thank goodness, there are so many remedies we can use here. Next week, we'll look at, I'm going to bring a whole lot across to you and show you each of them. But a remedy is basically any virtuous act, any virtuous act, right, performed for the purpose of purification. This constitutes the opponent force. So remedy is also called the power of the opponent, the power of the antidote, or applying remedies. This power purifies, or like I said, weakens the throwing karma. Right? So last when we talked about this last, we talked about the throwing karma. You go, that's the karma that throws you into the realm. So we want that karma to be weakened so it can't throw us into unfortunate states, unfortunate realms. We don't want the karma to have the power to throw us into a lower realm than the human realm. Right? So that's why we do the remedies. And it makes sense when you think about the snake bite analogy, right? You don't want that poison to have the force to end your life as a human being. So you need a remedy. So, and this, you know, the anti-snake bite stuff. So you take it and you don't die. But in terms of karma, you do the remedies to weaken the throwing karma so you don't find yourself in a lower realm rebirth. So we don't just regret our mistakes. We actively apply some sort of remedy to heal them. You know, oftentimes if you... at home or something, and you harm your spouse or you harm somebody you care for, right? With a careless word, right? You say you're sorry, that's great. But if you go and do it again and again, you know, your partner's going to look at you and go, your sorry's been very little because you do it again, right? And they'll say, so what are you going to do about it? Yeah, and if you say to them, well, what do you suggest? You know, if you try something out, and then you adopt the remedy and then you start applying it. So I know one remedy for people who have been in relationships is if they keep repeating, you know, they keep saying sorry, of course, but the behavior continues, right? So what's one of the major remedies that they do if you're in a relationship? You go down to Relationships Australia. There's your remedy, right? You go to a psychologist or something, isn't it? You tell them, this is what I've been doing. What can I do? Your psychologist or therapist or Relationships Australia will say, here's some remedies. Try this. And often you go along with your partner so they have some sort of confidence that you're actually serious about changing your behavior. Anything you'd like to say about these two powers, the powers of regret and the power of the remedy or the antidote? Does anybody remember the two first powers? If they both begin with R, what's the first one? Remorse or regret. That's right. What's the second one? Remedy. That's right. So they've got two R's. I'll need to remedy this. I need to do something about it. So let's come along now to the third power. The third power is called the resolve. So what is the resolve? Anybody know in general? Yeah. So a resolve is a decision, isn't it? You make a decision. Right? Resolve, you resolve to do something. I intend to do this thing. Often it's called like the, in other words, we call it the promise. So you say to your partner, I won't do this again. You know, I'm sorry. I won't do this again. But of course you do. Why is that? Because you don't have a remedy. So you need all three here. So the resolve is, this is also called the power of restraint. It's called the power of the promise, the resolution, the power of indestructible determination. I think it was one of the ones Lama used to use, that you were determined not to do this again. It's a turning away from the way you used to behave. Now, the strong conviction not to commit the behavior again. Why do you have the strong resolve, anybody? Why do you have to stop? Why do you resolve not to do this again? That's right, but you do not want the bad consequences of what you're doing. If you're in a relationship, you don't want your partner to leave you. That's the consequence if you keep on doing unskillful behaviors. In karma, the consequences are future rebirth. That's one of the consequences. If it's a bad one, you don't want that. There are four types of consequence in terms of karmic consequence. Basically, it's three, but this we're talking about four, right? The most important is this rebirth result. We don't want bad rebirth results. That's terrible for us. Another type of result you do not want to have is to create the same behavior again. You know, if you're arguing with your partner all the time and it's like looking up to divorce, isn't it? It's like, you agree, you got to know, I don't want the divorce, but the divorce is dependent upon my behavior. I keep repeating my behavior. I've got to stop that. So you see stories of humans in particular. So some years ago, you remember the story about the two little boys that murdered the third boy?
English.
Yeah, in England, right? And they were like, what the heck? Where'd that come from? You know, well, karma can explain that. You had a virtuous throwing karma. You became a human being, but the behavior was right there with you too. You took lives in other life. And now you're in here, and now you do the same. So you get these stories of people who kill animals. They often start with small animals and herd animals. Then they move up to humans. And you go, where's all that coming from? Because you can have a number of children in the same family. Only one of the children does it. So that's what they call, you know, the behavioral effect. Then the other effect is called the psychological effect or the experiential effect, where you might be born as a human being, but you're greatly afraid all the time. Very, very fearful, uncertain. So that's also a result of taking life in past lives. So that's the thing that should scare you, right? And that's the point. So you don't do it. And you go, oh my gosh, there's a lot of stuff to purify here. Yeah, okay, I'll stop the rebirth effect, but my behavior is like weird. You know, it's harmful. So this is what helps you to understand these three or four consequences of karma. So, you know, on both sides. On the positive side, it's great, we want all that. But here we're talking about the negative side, which is stuff we don't want. So this power primarily depends upon the first one, the regret or the remorse. Without that remorse, because, you know, you're looking here at the consequences of the action. The consequences are, there's a rebirth, is one of them. There's the flowing karma that's going to give you that rebirth. Once you're reborn as a human being, there's the behavioral effect and there's the psychological effects. So like I said, these principles of karma, negative creates negative. Negative psychological effect, negative behavioral effect, negative rebirth effect, negative environmental effect. You don't want any of it, or you want to decrease it as much as you possibly can. And you do that by using these four powers. Every time you do it, and many times it's naturally, we have this ability as human beings to know what we did wrong and feel bad about it and promise, oh, I regret it, I'm so sorry, I'm not going to do that again. We do that already. This is a really good thing to keep cultivating. So deciding firmly not to repeat the harmful action. This is the first one, remorse or regret, and this one are the most important of the four. And of these two, it's the first one. Because without the first one, this doesn't follow. If you don't actually regret, why would you resolve not to do it again? And that's why people in the court system, now justice system, they're looking for remorse. Because if you can demonstrate remorse, then they have somebody that you might not do this again. Same here. But, you know, this is like, we are making the judgment calls. It's not somebody else enforcing it upon us. We're just looking at the consequences of actions. So I'll give you a brief story about myself before going to the next one. About this power of resolve. When I was about 13, I had a really good mate. And I'd spend time there having dinners at his place. We did a lot of things together, you know. And then he met this girl, right? And so we'd go off together and things like that. And then I started playing up with his girlfriend. We're like only 13, you know, so it was sort of quite innocent. And then I got caught. And it was only then that I realized, like, what I'd created, what the consequences were. I had no idea beforehand. It was just all me and the girl, both of us just like fun. You know, she's getting lots of attention from me. I like playing around, etc. But when it was found out, oh my God, like the calamity, right? And then it was only then that I knew, oh my God, I've done something terrible. Like I've ruined my friendship with my friend. How can you trust me now? My friendship is finished. And then this girl, like crying, and this guy's brother really upset. He was really cranky and all upset, you know. I'm just like, Jesus, you know. And then the guilt, like I could never walk past their house anymore. You know, every time I walk past, it's like, you know, I don't want to be seen by them. You know, I don't want anybody to come out and say anything. So it was really heavy, you know. And so from this, I resolved never, ever to do this again. Never play up and try and sneak somebody's girlfriend or do that stuff again. I don't ever want to feel like this again. When I saw the consequences, I'm not doing it. So that suited me really well, you know, this idea not to do that. You don't, you know, get into future problems like that. And I'm sure for most of us, this is just what it's like, isn't it? It's you know, we do the action, we don't really know what we're doing. We don't really know the consequences of it. But then they unfold. And then we're so sorry. And for some of us, you might go, we might make this resolve then. I'm not doing that again. I'm never going to do that again. So you see how the two work together, right? Without the remorse, you don't have the resolve. The power of resolve is like firmly closing a door you just realize leads to a painful room. You don't just leave, you resolve not to open that door again. In fact, there's a great Buddhist story about this, about it's one of the first recorded instances of a mass murderer, in fact. There's a story of this a Hindu practitioner who wanted to please his master. And the wife of the master was very pleased with the student. So then the master got jealous. And he gave this student, he said, look, I can bring you to enlightenment, but this is what you need to do. You need to take 1,000 lives. So this is what this fellow does, and I need proof. So this man's name was Angulimala. So a mala is like the necklace, Anguli is the little finger. So he took the little finger of each victim and he strung them together in this necklace. And he decimated the countryside, right? So the story is that he killed 999 people. There's one more to go. Who can I kill? I'm nearly there. Then he remembered his mother. His mother was still alive, right? I'm going to kill him. So he's off on the way. And on the way, of course, the Buddha comes along, right? And so he sees the Buddha, I'll kill him. So he goes after the Buddha, but no matter how fast he runs, the Buddha's always just ahead of him, you know, and then he yells out to the Buddha, "Hey, stop," you know. And the Buddha says, "Angulimala, you stop." Right? And then he gives this teaching to Angulimala about the actual effects of these activities he's done. Right? So Angulimala gives up the killing. He becomes a monk, and he becomes an arahat in this life. Right? So all through purification practice mainly. So think about how difficult this would be, right? You've decimated the countryside. Right? The king has been trying to kill you with his troops, so they can't. This guy's a great warrior as well. Right? Now he's become a monk of the Buddha's, of the Buddha, right? So now he has to go out and beg for his food. And all the people know you're a killer. They treat him like rubbish. Right? They throw stones at him, give him the worst food, all these sort of things, right? He has to bear it. He has to live with this. And he did. And but out of this came this great spiritual realization. Right? So it didn't stop him realizing emptiness. It didn't stop him putting it into all the causes of suffering. So he's able to do it in his lifetime. But this sort of demonstrates how you can change, and how these activities don't necessarily need to stop you attaining high spiritual goals. But it could never have been done unless he had remorse and resolve to not do this again. And then, of course, he had to go out and help all the people. As a monk, he's got to go, his job is to help them. Of course, they didn't like him, they made it as hard as possible, but he had to keep trying. He never disrobed, and he attained this goal. So, of course, to attain his goal, Angulimala had to rely upon something. And what he relied upon was the Buddha and his teachings. So he gave up killing. He made recompense as best he could to purify it all of it. Yeah, that's right. And never experienced the hellish realms and reborn within cyclic existence again. That's right. Yeah, so his remorse must have been so intense. To realize actually what he'd done. And then his promise would have been so firm. I'll be gasping. This is a big, big topic. It's a really interesting topic. So the Angulimala story is a really interesting one. You know, like I said, he's done worse than we've done. And like I said, one of the first recorded instances of a mass murder in history. So we have not done that sort of, and then, yeah, like I said, to want then go and kill your mother, like that's immense, right? And to be stopped. But then want to kill the Buddha, right? It couldn't. So let's do our first meditation. So get comfortable in your seat. Let your body breathe itself. Then create an altruistic motivation for becoming familiar with these four opponent powers. So our actions create four kinds of results that shape our world. But the four opponent powers are the precise tools to purify the causes and transform their effects. By applying the powers, we actively change the trajectory of our lives. We move from being a victim of circumstances to being a conscious creator of our well-being. Just like Angulimala. So it might be helpful to think of it this way. The four powers are the medicine. The four results are the illness. We want to stop the illness by applying the medicine. So perhaps you've experienced a time where you were impatient, or maybe you have the habit of being impatient. This often results in us experiencing impatience from others. But just as the four powers are the medicine for the illness, in your own mind, now try to apply these four powers to impatience. Begin with regret. You have regret for your impatience. Then you try to repair any harm caused. You promise to be more patient. Then you practice love and kindness. So why is sincere regret or sincere remorse considered the first and most vital step in the healing process? Because the four powers are the medicine for our illness, regret is the essential diagnosis. Without acknowledging the illness, we would never seek the medicine to begin with. So how does understanding these four opponent powers change your view of personal responsibility? So knowing the four powers are the medicine for the illness or future suffering, responsibility transforms from a heavy burden of blame and guilt into the empowering ability to administer your own healing. So today, if a negative habit were to arise later on, just gently apply the first power. Just apply a sincere, kind-hearted regret. Decide to be the physician of your own mind. And then breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale. So again, the most important of the remedies is regret or remorse, isn't it? And again, it's towards the action. It's the action. The action is going to create the result. We regret the action. Secondly, now, when we engage in unskillful actions, there's basically two of them. One is called negativities. These are things like killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, harsh, you know, the 10 non-virtuous behaviors. They all bring about negative outcomes. They're all healed or purified using the four opponent powers. However, if you've taken vows or initiations, then there are other things that you promise to do in there. These are called, and if you break them, they're called downfalls. You've fallen down. So they're not purified by the four opponent powers. They're purified in a specific ritual that accords with that initiation. They're two different things. One of them is like natural negativities, right? These are just sort of promises. They're not natural. You're making, because I've taken this initiation, I've decided to behave in these particular ways. And those ways accord just to the ritual and the initiation. You know, other people do them. One of them might be, okay, I promise I will not eat a certain type of food. Right? That's one of the rules. Somebody else has not taken that initiation. They eat that food. It's not negative. It's not a downfall for them to eat that food. They have not taken the initiation. It is for you, though.
I
That's what Rajasattva is terrific for. So Rajasattva is amazing for that.
So
that's its power.
Yeah, that's right.
You bring all that in and then you do the Rajasattva. Rajasattva is the way you do it.
Okay.
Now, so in brief, I want to show you like how these four opposing powers actually work against the action and the effects. So we know that an action is four major parts, the opposing powers are four major parts, and the effects are fourfold. But then how to bring it together is very difficult just talking, is it? You can't hold the stuff together. So I've drawn up a diagram to show you. So we've got, these are three things, the actions, the four parts, the opposing powers, the four parts, and the effects, the four powers. So an action, remember we began, Susie was saying she's got a lot of it right. You have the basis, the attitude, which Ruby brought up, the thought, right? This is where the karma is, the attitude. You perform the action and the action finishes. There's the four parts. Basis, attitude, action or performance and culmination. The culmination of the action is opposed by remorse. You know, when the action finishes, like when I said, you know, I played up with my mate's girlfriend, finished by, and I got caught, it stopped, right? I had this great remorse for it. That's the opponent power. And what it stops you having is experiences similar to what you did. So I've never had that experience since, right? Because I've never done that action again. Right? I had such a deep remorse, I've never played up like that. And so I don't have an experience like that. The performance, right? So that's going to stop the throwing karma. And like I said, the remedies there, that's what we're going to talk about next week, is at least six there, but I've added another couple as well. Vajrasattva is one of the remedies. The attitude. So this is where you have this attitude, like the attitude was, I can play around safely with my mate's girlfriend, but I resolve not to. That's the antidote. Right? After seeing what it produced, I resolve never to do that again. And that stops, which it has, behavior similar to the cause. The basis, this is what you rely upon. And that stops these fruitional effects. So it will stop me having the rebirth, the lower realm rebirth, and finding myself in that environment. So as, for ourselves, we find ourselves not in a lower realm, but our fruition has been as a human being. So we find ourselves in the human, the environment of the human being. But also within that environment, you know, so one of the outcomes of that sort of behavior is to find that you have a great difficulties with your own spouse. If you are in a relationship, then it's difficult. Well, why wouldn't it be? It's been, you've been playing up yourself. So you have a lot of lack of trust and disagreements and all sorts of things like that. So this stops that. And of course, the reliance here is the three jewels and the mind of enlightenment. So I got this together with the help of Venerable well, Rabina, right? So, you know, I thought this is so useful. Like, you see how each part works. But as I said, every activity, every action you has always has parts, right? Like a beginning and an end, then it's in the middle. So you try and, if you, so for instance, I've read another story, a quick one. So, you know, Miffy and I used to watch these shows about aircraft disasters. And what you find all the time is it's never one cause. There's a multitude of causes come together. And often they're very small little things. So one little weak screw does this other thing here, does another thing there. And you find a person did something. So the accident is made up of all these parts. Funny thing with them is it just takes like one part to be weakened and the whole thing gets weakened. You know, often when you get another little weakening and my gosh, you heard that story about a chain is as strong as its weakest link? Same with karma. The idea is weaken the links, especially with negative stuff. You don't want it to create its full-on result, right? And it won't. If you weaken the links. And the most important way you weaken is remorse, regret, then the resolve. won't do it again. So this karmic seed of problem, wow, like you've just pulled away a whole lot of conditions for it to ripen to a terrible effect. Another quote from the Buddha, he says, Vivekananda was an amazing Buddhist scholar and founder of what they call the autonomy school, middle way autonomous school. He says, by adhering to the holy Dharma, non-virtuous karma, that is certain to be experienced as a suffering rebirth, will instead be experienced in this very life as an inconsequential result. So this is great news for us. And this is why you see many lamas, when something bad happens to us in this life, they go, good. That's great. This is like, because if it didn't take place, imagine how much worse it could have got, right? You could have ended up heck of a lot worse. Now it's finished, like rejoice. I know it's a very different way of how we usually look at it. But they're saying, now that it's come about, it cannot produce the fruitional result. There's a whole lot of results that won't produce. Rejoice in that, be glad. Now, that's all on the negative side, right? But we also create good actions too, and there's good karma, right? Positive karma. And we want to protect that. We don't want that to weaken. So there's ways of doing it. The best way you can do it is dedicate every good action that you do with the mind of enlightenment. We do that after every class, right? We dedicate it with bodhicitta. We do not want the virtue that we've generated by being here to be lost. Now, if you dedicate with any mind other than bodhicitta, it can be destroyed, weakened quite strongly. But with the mind of enlightenment, no. That's why this is the very best way to dedicate, mind of enlightenment. The thing that destroys our virtue is anger. Again, I might have told you the story before. We've all had parents, right? Your parents do the best they can. But if you start thinking about them in a way that, you generate anger towards them, all the good that they've done is wiped out. I mean, I know this from my own experience, because after doing it for so long, you think back, what's the good thing your parents have done? I go, well, I don't know. Like, what do you mean? They haven't done anything good. I'm completely wrong, but it takes a lot of effort to think about what good were my parents. This is what anger does, doesn't it? You have anger towards anybody. Everything good that they've ever done to you, it's very hard to recollect it. So this would be anger. Anger is the worst. So we need to be patient. The opposite of anger is patience. And lastly, recollect the three spheres. Right? So we'll just come to that. So here, cultivate patience, right? Why? To protect the virtue being destroyed. Every good thought that I ever had to my mother and father was destroyed through my own anger. It took me ages to bring it back. Right? To actually work out, oh, they were right. This is the best they could. There were a lot of good things they did. It took a long time. This is what the idea of patience, it does this, it protects your virtue. Now, the three spheres are, there is no natural existence of yourself purifying through confession. This means that if you look for the self, you, who is doing this practice, you will not find yourself. You are empty of having an objective self. There's no objective self. You do exist, but not objectively. This is a great healer for guilt too. If you go looking for who's the person who's guilty, you don't find anyone there. So there's no objective me. There's no. We all have a self. It does not exist in a reified way. It's just a name. Now, it's the same with the act of purification. Like, we say we're purifying, where is it? Again, it doesn't objectively exist. It exists in mere name. It does exist, but not objectively, not in a reified manner. And finally, the deed itself is being purified. But it has no objective existence. How do we know? Because we look for it. We go, if I've really done this, like, where is it? Where is it then? If I've done this deed of, like I said, played up at my friend's girlfriend, like, where is that? Yeah, the only way it exists now is like a memory, isn't it? You look for the memories, where are they? You don't find them, they exist in mere name. So this is the great purifier, wisdom realizing emptiness, that none of these phenomena exist in a reified way that they naturally appear to us. They don't have any objective existence. So again, this is not belief. This should be checked out. If you search in any way for yourself, the deed to be purified, the action of purification, the result of it, you never find them. They're not there. So they do not exist in this objectified manner. They don't exist reified. This does not mean they do not exist at all. It does not mean that. If it meant that they did not exist at all, why would we do purification practice? You know? So that's, if we go to not existence at all, that's too far. If we go reified existence, objective existence, that's too far. So they do exist, but in a way that's quite different than how we naturally apprehend them. Now we will meditate. Let's do a quick one. Again, just get comfortable. Have your body nice, your back straight, shoulders relaxed, attention on your breath so that you find yourself breathing naturally. Create an altruistic motivation for meditating. Now just recollect a recent moment of kindness. You extended kindness recently. This is a small seed of virtue you planted. This is called a positive seed, this act of kindness. It's precious. In anger, it can act like a fire that destroys your own inner peace. So without a way to protect these seeds, these potentials of goodness, your best efforts can feel wasted, leaving you stuck in cycles of regret. But you can protect your inner goodness with three shields. Dedication, towards enlightenment, patience, and the wisdom of emptiness. So how can we apply dedication to secure that our merit before anger even arises? We want to secure our merit before anger arises. The dedication is like depositing your paycheck. It moves your positive energy into a useful and universal account for all beings. And it resides safely there beyond the reach of self-centered anger. So when irritation strikes, how does patience act as an act of God? So while dedication is like depositing the paycheck, patience is the guard who stops the thief at the door. It creates a space between a trigger and your reaction so that your virtue is never stolen. And why is the wisdom of emptiness the ultimate unbreachable vault? So wisdom reveals that there's no solid thief, no solid owner, and no solid treasure to be stolen. It dissolves the entire drama of anger. So today on, from today onwards, please, whenever you create an act of kindness, just dedicate it to the goodness and to the well-being of everyone. And now, breathing through your nostrils, exhale, let your eyes flutter open. Yes, this is really simple. You know, we do good things. Whenever you do it, just sort of think, may this bring about your enlightenment. May this kind, anything you do that's good, just have that, may it bring enlightenment to you. May this actually bring, there's a great prayer from the Devi where it says, may anyone who even sees me, thinks of me, speaks about me, may this be a cause for their enlightenment. Great, isn't it? Lots of people are going to see you. People think of you. You know, it's like, wow, just like that. It's terrific. So there's this really simple way of creating huge merit. Okay, so we know that karma can be purified. We have it a four-opponent method. And we can protect and increase the good. So let's protect the good by dedicating very shortly. So there is material up on the site, and we've got some stuff from the FPMT up there. On page 25, there's material about these four-opponent powers. And on our LTC notes, you'll see from pages 3 to 6, page 10, and page 43 to 45, there's also material there. So next week, we'll look at the six means of purification. You know, these six different things that we can do. So let's look after the merit we've created. So this is a dedication. It's built on enlightenment. And the next verse that we read to is all about this wish to bring others to enlightenment. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. The long life prayer from His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. The wish granting, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech. May all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And finally, for the quick discovery of Rinpoche's reincarnation of Rinpoche. In holding and spreading the Muni's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you I make this request.